Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is William Cohan, the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. William Cohan's a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times, where he covers a variety of financial issues. His acclaimed book, House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, details the last days of Bear Stearns and Company. And he began his career as an investigative reporter in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then went on to work on Wall Street for over a decade and a half, both at Lazard Frere and at J.P. Morgan Chase. In 2007, he published The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Lazard Frere and Company. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Cohan.
Thank you, Ian. Always great to be here.
And Fitch, the rating agency, have just warned that they may downgrade the USA over a debt standoff, prompting the head of Fitch's sovereign rating team, David Riley, to say this is another self-inflicted crisis, and it will put into question the predictability and reliability of our policymaking when it comes to fiscal policy. Are there any adults in the room listening?
That's a very good question, Ian. I don't think so anymore. I think, this is obviously nothing new. Other rating agencies more than a year ago, noticed the same thing and have downgraded the U.S. sovereign debt before. So, unfortunately, this is nothing new. And as we saw with the fiscal cliff discussions, it's quite possible to raise taxes, as we saw, on the wealthy, which was probably somewhat long overdue. But, getting down to the nitty-gritty of cutting spending, fixing the tax code, fixing the debt ceiling problem that we're now faced with again, those kinds of issues just seem to all be bargaining chips in this great political chess game that these guys are playing down in Washington that has nothing to do, unfortunately, with representing the American people, which is what they're supposed to be doing.
So when the spokesperson for Fitch says that they're living hand-to-mouth based on robbing Peter to pay Paul, that's not what we associate with a AAA-rated government. Is that how Wall Street's looking at this? Are they wondering who's minding the store in Washington?
I was just speaking to a partner in a Wall Street firm just this afternoon, and he's an investor, and his point was sort of very interesting and also quite right. I mean, he actually isn't expecting anything out of Washington anymore, so he doesn't plan for that. In other words, he doesn't expect that they're going to be able to get their mind around meaningful spending cuts. He thinks that the tax increase has happened. Both Republicans and Democrats like to spend money. It's just a question of how they pay for it. The Democrats like to raise taxes, and so we just had that. Republicans like to borrow money, and we continue to have that. I think his point is that meaningful reform of spending and meaningful deficit reform seems to be very elusive, and so he's not planning for it anymore. I mean, it's just, forget it. I mean, he's not going to get caught up in sort of the yo-yo vicissitudes of whether or not they'll do it or not. He's just assuming that they won't and that we will continue to have spending problems and we will continue to have growing deficit and debt problems. And frankly, we have been incredibly lucky, Ian, and I think this is obviously by design because this is, QE1, QE2, QE3, and now QE4. The Fed is intentionally keeping rates low, both short-term and long-term rates low, lower than they otherwise would be. And that hurts many people. It hurts savers, for one. It hurts people on a fixed income, for two. But it really helps the government borrow money and pay the interest due on that debt. If rates were allowed to go to normal levels or anything resembling normal levels, we would be bankrupt or close to it at this point. We could not afford to pay the interest on that debt if it weren't being kept artificially low. So, we should be downgraded. We're becoming like a banana republic because, unfortunately, our elected officials won't do what we've put them there to do.
Again, I'm speaking with William Cohan, the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. He's a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times. He's also written The House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street about collapse of Bear Stearns, and The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Laissez Faire and Company. So, of course, the deficit hawks, as you point out, the Republicans like to borrow money and then cry out and, you know, moan about the debt, which they run up with unpaid-for wars. And after all, Bush did preside over the collapse of Wall Street, although that was a bipartisan train wreck in terms of its genesis. But the idea that these deficit hawks on the Republican side have any, why does anybody take them seriously? I mean, the last time around in August 2011, the Standard & Poor's downgraded the debt over the threat of blackmail over the debt ceiling from the Tea Party caucus. And that only had the effect of raising the cost of the debt. So if they're really concerned about our deficit, the last thing they should be doing is praying this kind of reckless brinkmanship that will add to the cost of our debt.
Well, now you're being too logical, Ian. You know, there are so many good reasons for them not to behave the way they do. There's so many good reasons for our congressmen and women not to put us in a position where it looks like we're going over a fiscal cliff or not being able to pay our debts as they become due. There are so many good reasons not to do it, and yet they do it anyway. So that, unfortunately, is the reality. You know, an interesting, you know, sidelight, again, thanks to the Fed. I mean, yes, even though our debt was downgraded, I think actually if you look at the price of Treasury securities now, it's probably high in the yield, i.e. the interest rate that people get on those Treasury securities, and they trade in inverse proportion to each other. So the price has probably never been higher. The yield has never been lower. So usually what happens when people think you can't pay your debts as they become due, they charge you more when you borrow money. And the opposite seems to be happening here. So even though we're, you know, embarking on this $15 trillion of debt and these huge budget deficits, we're about to, you know, not pay our debts as they become due, you would think that the price that it takes for us to borrow money would be going up because people would be concerned about lending us money and getting it back. So when that happens, people who lend money demand higher rates of return. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened. And one of the reasons it hasn't happened is, as I was just saying, it's because of the Fed's policy of buying up so much Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities and driving down driving up their price and driving down their interest rates and their yields, is that basically you look around the world. And where else can investors, I mean, the logic is, where else can investors put their money? But again, I think that's faulty logic because at some point people are going to say, enough of this already. You know, America is no longer a safe haven. They can't get their act together fiscally. They can't get their act together on these deficits. They can't get their act together on the debt ceiling. And you know, they're just not functioning properly anymore, or they're not functioning the way we've come to think of America as functioning, and so we're not going to do this anymore. And when that happens, well, then Mary bar the door, because it's going to cost us a lot more to borrow money, and people aren't going to be willing to bail us out in that way.
Well, your point is well taken, but also the reality of what you've just described, William Cohen, gives a lie to the other Republican mantra, is that the United States is going to become like Greece. Well, nobody wants to lend money to Greece, and everybody's buying our debt. But obviously, at a certain point, people are going to wonder whether there's any adults in the room in terms of who's in charge of the American economy. Let's turn to that issue, because the president's really, I think, boxing himself into a corner where he simply cannot negotiate. He's refused to negotiate. He reiterated it again at his press conference early this week. And, you know, the Republicans haven't said that they're going to back down. I mean, he's obviously counting on the Republicans to break ranks. Senator Lisa Murkowski's already broken ranks and said that many more of her colleagues agree with her that this is an irresponsible behavior on the part of the Republicans. But my assumption is that Obama's strategy is based in part upon the belief that the patrons of the Republican Party, after all, Wall Street gave a tremendous amount of money to Mitt Romney and withheld the kind of money they gave to Obama in 2008. So presumably there's some quid pro quo there. And you're on Wall Street, Bill Cohen. Other Wall Street is going to their Republican representatives and people they've supported and saying, you know, grow up and stop this nonsense.
Well, I suppose that they are, because, of course, they don't want this debt ceiling debate to be a cliffhanger either, because obviously, you know, the recovery is sort of is in the process of taking place. Things are looking better. The election's over. The fiscal cliff discussion has at least been kicked down the road for a few months. You know, we're trying to get our economic house in order. Interest rates are low. The market is relatively strong. It's up around 13,000 now. It's doubled since its low point when Obama first took office. I mean, there's a lot of things that seem like, you know, unemployment rate is starting to fall. A lot of things are falling into place. This debt ceiling debate, of course, will upset all that. And if they then close the government, that makes it, you know, all the worse. And you know, as you said, it raises real questions of confidence in our system. So, of course, Wall Street doesn't like that. But, you know, you just have to look, unfortunately, at the electoral map or the political map. And, you know, a lot of Wall Street people are in New York. And I don't think you'll find that New York representatives are holding the hard line and being crazy on this issue. It's more, you know, representatives, of Tea Party districts, and a lot of those aren't particularly really found in the New York area, which is where, of course, all the Wall Street guys live. So I think the problem is more geographic, demographic. There are people, unfortunately, in the Republican Tea Party group who just feel like this was their mandate as well, to be as disruptive as they possibly can be to Obama and the Democrats. Unfortunately, they hurt everybody when they do that. And they lost this fight, at the beginning of the year with the fiscal cliff. They lost that fight, and I think Obama must be hoping that coalition that he got to get through that momentary fiscal cliff debate is what will prevail again, in this debate over the debt ceiling. And I suspect he's going to be right, but in the meantime, you know, this vicissitudes, knowing whether or not it's going to work or not, is really debilitating, especially when you've got this nascent economic recovery trying to take hold. It's really debilitating to people psychologically, to, you know, about whether to invest new money on plant equipment or hire new workers if our government is going to go off and do bizarro world things every now and then.
Well, again, there's a constituency in the government, in the Tea Party, that seem to believe that their job is to frustrate Obama at every turn. And if the United States and the standard of living and the wealth and well-being of the country is collateral damage, it doesn't seem to bother them. In many ways, it feeds into this idea that their job is to destroy government. Or in the words of Grover Norquist, they want to shrink government down to the size where they can drown it in the bathtub.
Well, I mean, again, it's right along with Mitch McConnell, Senator McConnell, saying, you know, their purpose of the Republican Party is to make sure that Obama has only one term. They seem so preoccupied with politics as opposed to what is the right thing to do for the American people that it really boggles the mind. I mean, you know, there were many of us who were very unhappy with two terms of George W. Bush, but, you know, we had to put up with it. I don't think, you know, the position of people who were unhappy with George W. Bush was that, you know, we have to do everything we can to inflict pain on him, whether, you know, and if the whole rest of the country is collateral damage, well, that's a price we're worth paying. I mean, there are so many problems that we have in the country now that can be solved if we work together, and a great place to work together in a bipartisan way is, of course, in Congress. And we just had an election. The people spoke, and it's incredible to me that you still have these Republican congressmen who don't get that message and who can't look beyond their own district and what got them elected and do what's right for the country. I mean, this is the most foolish debate to be having. We've just come off this fiscal cliff debate. We're going to have it again in 2 months. And in the interim, we have to have a debt ceiling debate. I mean, honestly, why anybody is out there willing to buy the debt of the United States at this point when it clearly looks like it's run by a bunch of yo-yos defies belief at this point.
Well, apparently, the way these Tea Party people think, and they come from safe districts because of gerrymandering, they're more concerned about a primary challenge than they are about recognizing what happened in the last election, where the Democrats picked up a substantial, they won, I think, what, 25 out of the 32 races or something, the seats that were up, and Obama won handily and had a blowout in the Electoral College. It's like none of that happened to these people. But the thing that I was saying earlier, though, Bill Cohen, that concerns me is that given the irrationality of these people, then you've got Obama trying to be the adult and be reasonable and making the point in his press conference that, you know, that this is not new debt we're talking about by raising the debt ceiling. It's not new debt. We're actually paying off old bills. And it's like going to a restaurant and eating, gorging yourself, and then not wanting to pay the tab. You know, what happens there? Well, you get arrested, you know? So he's boxed himself into a corner here. He doesn't have a fallback position. So he's prepared to go to the mat on this, and he's made it clear. So the ball's in their court. And what concerns me is that they're not necessarily going to behave rationally.
Well, I agree. I mean, I agree with you. And he's clearly drawn a line in the sand. He is trying to be an adult. He probably can't believe that these children are misbehaving again. But sometime, I mean, he's a parent. He ought to know. I'm a parent. I know, and yet sometimes you don't always do the right thing when you're parenting. You can't go directly at somebody and draw a line in the sand and confront them with their bad behavior and expect them to change, because both sides will sort of dig in. He must believe, Ian, he must believe that that coalition that he put together to raise taxes on the wealthiest Americans and you know, punt the fiscal cliff issues, you know, the sequester down the road a few months, that coalition that held and allowed him to do that is going to hold again in this debt ceiling debate, or else, frankly, he wouldn't do it unless he's trying going to you know deploy Vice President Biden again to be on a diplomatic mission with these crazy right-wing Republicans and hoping that it'll work. You know, this is too important an issue. You know, it's absolutely childishness and silliness that we are having this debate again. We just had this a year and a half ago and promised we wouldn't do it again, and yet here we're doing it again. I don't know why we have suddenly become ungovernable at the very moment when we need a bipartisan leadership in the country and in Congress to help us get out of our economic problems, which I really feel like we are on the edge of getting out of them, by the way. I feel a new spirit, a renewed spirit in the land of positive, you know, economic news coming. But why are we choking? Why are we snatching defeat from the jaws of victory again? I never quite understand it. And you know, maybe Obama has decided that he's got this coalition and this is too childish an issue to debate, and these people will come to their senses. It's a gamble. It's a bet. I think he's going to win, but unfortunately there's going to be some collateral damage along the way as we, you know, bite our fingernails to the bone waiting to see if he's going to be right.
Well, William Cohen, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with William Cohen. He's the author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. He's a contributing editor at Fortune and a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times. His acclaimed book, The House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, details the last days of Bear Stearns and Company. And he began his career as an investigative reporter in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then went on to work on Wall Street for over a decade and a half, both at Lazard Frere and at J.P. Morgan Chase. In 2007, he published The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Lazard Frere and Company. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the lack of women in Obama's new cabinet.
Well, some people try and treat me like a man. Yeah, some people try and treat me like a man. Well, I guess they just don't understand. Yeah, some people try and treat me like a man. They think I know, but that's just me.